If you want to be turning to Genesis chapter 12, we will pick up in verse 10. I forgot how long ago it was. We finished verse 9, but we will pick up in verse 10, however long that may have been. And this has always been a curious story for me, with Abraham going to Egypt and telling her, "I want you to say that you're going to be my sister. That way they won't kill me and they'll bless me instead." And that plan seemed to work for a while until the plague started coming and Pharaoh found out. And then he kicked Abraham and or Abram and Sarah out of Egypt. So what are we to make of this story? I thought we would look at it a little bit in detail, but I want us to get us caught up to where we are in Genesis. Chapter 12 of Genesis is a major turning point in this book. And you could rightly say Genesis 12 is a huge turning point in the story of the entire Bible. Chapters 1 through 11 of Genesis, God is describing for us really what is going on with the entire world. Not really focusing in on one family, but more on events. Now, there are 10 times in Genesis where it says, "This is the book of generations," or something very close to that. We see it first in chapter 2, in verse 4. But those are kind of structural landmarks that we are given in telling this story of what happened at the beginning. So chapters 1 through verses, chapter 2, verse 3, really tells the story of creation. And then we have the generation of Adam and his sons and what is happens to them with Cain and Abel. And then starting in chapter 5, we see the increased wickedness of the entire earth. So again, we're just kind of looking at the big picture of what is going on everywhere. And then, starting in chapter 6 in verse 9, we're given the story of Noah and how God saves the righteous and basically wipes out the entire population with the flood. Now we start over with Noah and his family. So starting in chapter 10, going through chapter 11, verse 9, and I'm just hitting these landmarks, the generations of, we are given there the story of the Tower of Babel and how God told them, "I want you to spread out, scatter," and they said, "Let's stay in one place and let's make a name for ourselves." And then in chapter 11, starting in verse 10, we're giving the family of Shem, ending with Terah, who is the father of Abraham. Now, that is the last time we see that landmark until chapter 25, verse 12. And so we go from chapters 11, verse 27, all the way to chapter 25, really dealing with this is the story of Abram. And so you can see the significance or the turning point, you might say, in the book, that we are focusing on Abram, whom God chose in chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, that through him all families on earth will be blessed. And of course, talking about Jesus coming through Abram and blessing the entire world. The rest of Genesis is we are going to zoom in and tell the events of what happened with the family of Abraham. And so verses 1 through 8 of chapter 12, that we've already covered, God told Abraham, "I want you to go forth from your country. And that's what I want you to do. And if you do that," verses 2 and 3, "I will bless you because of it." And so in verse 5, Abram obeyed, taking Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his nephew, which I think probably his son as well, became kind of his stepson, since Lot's father passed away. And the people that he acquired in chapter 12, verse 7, Abraham travels, gets to Shechem, where God tells him, "To your descendants I will give this land." Now, the only problem that Abraham might have had with that statement, or question that Abraham might have had, is, well, I don't have any descendants. We learn that in chapter 11, verse 30. It was kind of told us from the very beginning, Abram and Sarai did not have any children. And the other problem with that, we learn in chapter 12, verse 4, is Abram was 75 years old. And we learn later on that Sarai was 65. But in verse 8, Abram, and I want us to again notice this phrase, because I think it is key, especially looking at when it happens or when it occurs in Genesis. Verse 8, Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now, that does not simply mean he just calls out the Lord's name. If you notice, chapter 4, verse 26, the first time this phrase is used, it is used in a way that he is committing himself to worshiping the Lord. "Since you have said, I'm giving you this land to your descendants, Abram called on the name of the Lord." So up to this point, Abram is just model, right? He is picture perfect, we might say. Well, that all changes very quickly in what happens next. So looking again at the passage that was read for us, verses 9 and 10, is Abram decides he goes ahead and travels toward the Negev, which had been kind of south of Judah, which Judah didn't exist here, but you kind of know the geography there. So he continues to go south, and it says in verse 10, "Now there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was severe in the land." I don't think we are to see this as a bad thing or a sinful thing, that Abraham just keeps traveling, even though God said, "I'm going to give this land to your descendants." He left Canaan because it says there was not only a famine, it was a severe famine. And so he takes his whole family, all those who he had acquired, that's mentioned in chapter 12, verse 5. And if you think about Egypt, why would he go to Egypt? Egypt's not too far away, but it was very well equipped for a famine, right? Having the Nile, having a lot of waters there, it still would have been a pretty fertile land. And so they go onward to Egypt. Then look at verse 11. "When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to Sarai, his wife, 'I know that you are a woman beautiful in appearance.'" Now, I wish he would have stopped there, or else this whole story would have been a whole lot better. And the view of how Abram treated his wife or talked to his wife, we would have a much better opinion of. But he does this, notice, when he is about to enter Egypt. So it seems that while he is traveling with this huge caravan to Egypt, he is just going over and over in his mind, what's going to happen when we get there? So they do not have much time, or Sarai doesn't call a timeout when he says, "This is the plan." Well, what is the plan? We haven't read it yet. Well, he says, "You are a woman of beautiful appearance," and he is, unfortunately, not being just romantic at this point in time to his wife. He says, "And when," verse 12, "the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife.' Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Say, 'You are my sister,' that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared for your sake." It is interesting, as we kind of travel along together in this study of Genesis, that I think you'd be hard-pressed, I think this is safe to say, that we know more about the relationship, the husband-wife relationship between Abram and Sarai, or Abraham and Sarah, than we do of any other couple in the entire Bible. And so this is kind of the beginnings of what we learn about them. And the beginning wasn't just super great, looking at this first discussion that is written down for us. He is convinced, when the Egyptians see you, they will kill me and they will let you live. What does Abraham, or Abram, I just keep calling him Abraham, you just translate for me and call him Abram. What is Abram thinking when he says this? Or what is Abram assuming about the Egyptians when he says this to his wife? Certainly he is assuming the extreme worst, right, of the Egyptians and what they will do to acquire his beautiful wife of 65 years old. He says this really kind of matter-of-factly. Now, I know when we enter Egypt, this is what is going to happen. There's no, this might happen, this may happen. Just in case you see these signs, it's going to lead to this. He is just convinced this is what we have in store for us ahead. And he says, when the Egyptians see you, they will kill me and they will let you live. Therefore, this is what I want you to do. This is how we're going to combat. Say that you are my sister. So Abram is telling, or we may say commanding, his wife, I want you to lie for my sake, so that I will live. Now, we learn, and I'm not going to necessarily go here, but in Genesis chapter 20, Abram does this very same thing with Abimelech. I want you to tell them that you're my sister. And we learn in that chapter, this is not just the best thing he can make up, but we learn in chapter 20, verse 12, that Sarai was in fact his half-sister, that they shared the same father, but had different mothers. So just tell them, you're my sister. Just tell them this half-truth. And we understand why Abram wanted her to lie, so that it will go well with me because of you, that my life may be spared for your sake. He repeats his strong conviction that he will be killed if the Egyptians find out they are married, and he is just convinced this is the only way that I'm going to live. Let me just stop here, and if this were a class, I'd open up and ask this question. What do you see wrong with Abram's decision here? And I think the class would go on at least 10 minutes with all these answers to this is what I see that's wrong. Well, I'd see this wrong. These are multiple things, right, that we see Abram just not being the guy that we thought he was, right, in the first part of this chapter. Number one, he is commanding his wife, I want you to lie. Notice that his plea is extremely self-focused. Notice again, so that it will go well with me, because of me. I don't know how many times he says me or I in this short little statement, but it is just full of me statements, of I statements. He is throwing his wife under the bus in a very bad predicament, right? They are going to want you, and they're going to kill me for you. So, to save my life, to save my neck, just tell them we're brother-sister. And maybe one of the things that is most telling about Abram is he is trusting his own wits, right? He is trusting in his own mind, this is how I'm going to get out of this difficult situation that's made up in his mind. If we were to venture back to verses 2 and 3 of this chapter, Remember what God had promised him. You will be a great nation. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. And all of these things, in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. What is he forgetting? Well, he is depending on himself instead of trusting and depending on the Lord. What is also absent in this text is there is no rebuttal from his wife. It seems as though she is just going to obey this plan, however stupid or however the sacrifice on her behalf to follow through with this. She just seems to go along right with it. Well, notice what happened in Egypt, verses 14 to 16. It says, when Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. And when the princes of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, he dealt well with Abram. And he had sheep, oxen, male servants, male donkeys, and camels. So Abram's plan seems to be working and just kind of unfolding just as he would thought. They see her to be very beautiful, even at 65. And she goes along with the plan that her husband, without backing out of it, Pharaoh blesses Abram since he believed he was the brother of his now new wife. He has given several animals and probably some of the slaves to take care of the flocks that he was given. And you have to think, if you're Abraham, I want us to kind of take a time out and say you're Abraham and you have been married for I don't know how long, probably a long time. We'll just say 40 years. Is that okay? They were married at, what would that be? Do a quick math. 35 and 25? Is that about right? Let's just say 40 years, and you're going to Egypt. Say, honey, this is going to be the best thing for us. I want you to say I'm your brother. And you may be taken, but at least I'm going to live. And I just want you to focus on that. Just focus on I get to live in all this. And you submit, even though you shouldn't have. And now you're Abraham. And you know someone else has your wife. And he has given you all this stuff. Are you happy? You have all this stuff. You have all these servants. Things are working just as you had planned. But you don't have your wife. Not only do you not have your wife is with another man. I don't think Abram really thought this. He needed a longer journey, right, to really think about. From the Negev to Egypt was not quite long enough for Abram to figure out this plan was not very well. Well, notice what happens next in verse 17 through 20. But the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. So Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go. And Pharaoh gave men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had. What happens? Well, if you're Pharaoh, you're the king of Egypt, you're the one in charge of this very great land, and now all of a sudden you are afflicted with these great plagues. Now, this would not be the last Pharaoh to be afflicted by God with great plagues. But notice, why is Pharaoh being afflicted? It's because of Sarai, notice what the text says, Abram's wife. Pharaoh said, well, thought this was my wife. No, this is Abram's wife. And then what a confrontation in verses 18 and 19 with Pharaoh and Abram. What is this you have done to me? Because of you, all of these great plagues have come upon my land. Why did you not tell me she was your wife? This is what Abram should have done, right, from the very beginning. And it does not seem to me, and I may be wrong in this, but it doesn't seem to me that Pharaoh is allowing Abram to respond to these questions. It is, Abram, you are guilty. And I'm just going to keep throwing questions at you, accusing you of what you know to be wrong. Right? Why in the world did you do this to me? And why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister so that I took her for my wife? Now then, this is the verdict. Here is your wife. Take her and go. It is interesting to me, in verses 10 through 20, it is told us six different times, in one way or another, Sarai happens to be Abram's wife. Six times. You think we would have remembered it after, for me, the third time. Six times in this short amount of verses, this is Abram's wife. That seems to be, right, the emphasis. But what does Abram say? This is my sister. So take your wife and get out of here. They are expelled from Egypt. And this is the last time that we are told that Abram sets foot in this land. What an interesting story. Right, if Brent Kercheval were here, he'd tell me, Patrick, so what? Well, let's try to figure out the so what. What does this story have for us? Brent is Barry's son. Barry would never say that. He's too kind, but his son, I don't know what happened. So what? What are some applications? What are some thoughts that we can learn from this? Number one, Abram gives us an excellent way on how not to treat your wife. Right? Just go down the list, and whatever Abram does, you do the opposite, and you'll have a great relationship with your wife. What does the New Testament tell us to do? What are we commanded to do? What is the example that Jesus gives us? We have our needs, our thoughts, our desires, and we have someone else's desires. What do we need to do with those? Put those first, right? Put the other person first before your own. Someone, and I took him very seriously. He's a man that I respected so much. And I'm going to go ahead and turn here. If you want to mark Genesis chapter 12, it's just a couple of verses that I want to read. But this man who I met in another state, who had a failed marriage, and I'm turning to Philippians chapter 2. You want to be turning there with me. And he said, you know what? The greatest piece of marriage advice that there is in the whole Bible? Well, he had my attention because I really liked Misty at the time, and I was about to be married to her. And I said, I got to hear this. What is it? What do you got for me? And he said, well, it's in Philippians chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility, count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interest, but also to the interest of others. Now, I don't know if that's the greatest two verses on how to treat your wife, a great marriage, but I have a hard time thinking of any better. But you notice what Abram did? In his story, it was, I'm really concerned about me. Therefore, I'm coming up with this plan, and you're kind of responsible because you're so beautiful. And because you're so beautiful, that puts me at risk. He was thinking of what's going to be best for me. Certainly, in marriage, in any relationship that we have with anyone, what should our thoughts be? I'm more concerned about you. Why? Because you are more important. You are more significant than I am. And whatever is to be done, you are going to be the first in mind. And I tell you, brethren, I have failed in that many times. I haven't been the husband that I should have been. I'm working on it. But so many times I get wrapped up in what's going to be best for me. And to be blunt, a lot of times I don't take into account Misty's feelings or Misty's thoughts. What she would do. How is she feeling? So I say that so you can help me with that. But let's not be like Abram and say, you know what, this is going to be what's best for me. Let's think of the other person as more important. And verses 5 on tell us, if you want to do that, if you want to know a great example, just look to Christ, right? He is, have this mind in you that is also in Christ. Then it tells that beautiful saying in humility, right? This is what Christ was willing to do for us. And that should describe what we are willing to do for each other. The second thing we can learn, I think, from this story is going back to Genesis chapter 12. Notice how sometimes your sin affects others. This was Abram's plan. Because he had a very negative view of the Egyptians' moral character or moral standards, he believed the worst. I don't know why Abram thought that way. It didn't seem like he was too much concerned in Canaan about the Canaanites, but he was very much concerned about these Egyptians. He knew what these Egyptians were going to do. Maybe they had a bad reputation. We just are not told. But notice, he believed the worst in people. Abraham sinned by not trusting in God with his life. God promised he would become a great nation. And later on in this chapter, God says that you will have so many offspring or so many descendants, it will fill this entire land of Canaan. Instead of trusting God and just saying, you know what, I just need to do what's right. I am scared to death about what is going to happen in Egypt. I wish I didn't have to go, right? Doesn't that tell you just how severe this famine was? That he was even willing to go to Egypt? He was assuming the worst. Has that ever happened to you? When you go into a situation and you are just convinced, man, this is going to be terrible. What do you do in that situation? We can be like Abram, and we can depend on our own wit, our own strength, our own wisdom, or whatever we have to get ourselves out of it, which usually, how does that go? Kind of a lot like how it went for Abram. Or we can put our trust in the Lord. others were affected by Abram's sin of not trusting in the Lord and lying, and Sarai going along with this plan. Pharaoh sinned unknowingly, right, by taking Sarai to be his wife. That's why God afflicted Egypt, because you have another man's wife. And Egypt was affected by great plagues. How many people were affected due to this poor decision of Abram? Probably countless. Sometimes it is our sin that affects other people negatively. But maybe the main lesson that I want us to gain from this text, this story, is I want us to see God's mercy on Abram. Really, the first 9 verses of this chapter, we are just, I'll say, I am just very impressed with Abram. He is 75 years old, right? His wife is 65. And God tells him, I want you to leave everything that's familiar to you and just go to a land that I'm going to show you. I'm not even going to tell you where it is. Just get up and go. And Abram gets up and goes. And God is going to bless Abram in all of these different ways. And my mind is like, well, if anyone deserves to be blessed, it is a man like this. It is a man who is willing, in verse 8, to call upon the name of the Lord. Well, what do you think about Abram at the end of chapter 12? I kind of see him as a selfish, not very good husband kind of a guy. What does God do? God blesses Abram. He blesses him with lots of flocks, with more servants, more things than he had going in. Now, I believe the rebuke that Pharaoh gave him was well deserved. And you would have hoped Abram would have taken that lesson with him throughout the rest of his life, till we get to chapter 20 and he messes up in the same way. God chose Abraham despite Abraham just being perfect. How many times have we thought, I'm not good enough for God. I keep messing up. I keep sinning against him. How could God love me? How could just feel like giving up? I keep running into this sin and I'm scum. Well, how did God feel about Abram? Does it say that God just so frustrated with Abram, he says, I take back everything I said to you in verses 2 and 3 and in verse 7. So because you messed up, you no longer get all those promises that I made. I just see a lot of patience, a lot of love, a lot of mercy, grace that God is showing to this sinful man. I think one of the things that we need to take with us whenever we are reading any part of the Bible, and especially, I'll say especially the narrative parts of the Bible. What are we looking for? Are we looking for just kind of cute applications, and or are we really looking for who is God? Remember what Jesus says are the two most important commandments in the whole law. It's love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. When we read God's word, we need to be looking for, how does this story, what does it tell me about God? And how is this story going to help me love God more? I hope this story helps you with that. I hope maybe you can see yourself as Abram. I'm not perfect, messed up big time, but God still blesses. God still loves. I think if there's anything we are to take from this text, is how patient and loving our God is. If you don't know this God, or if you want a better relationship with this God, my earnest plea and encouragement would be read his book. And don't just read the stories. Don't just read it for information's sake, or I'm going to get first place in the Bible quiz next week. Read it for, I want to know about how God loves me. And I hope we'll see that throughout this entire story. And it's its entire book. Well, the lesson is now yours. If there is anyone at this point who needs to turn their life over to the Lord or needs to repent, needs to do anything in any way we can help you, we invite you to come forward now as we stand and as we sing.